age of mass incarceration, which day by day increases its infliction upon the elderly.
Award-winning journalist, activist, and freedom fighter Mumia Abu-Jamal has been in prison for 40 years.
The reason Mumia is in prison is because he speaks the truth against the injustices in the system.
He was convicted and sentenced to death in a trial that Amnesty International has denounced as failing to meet the minimum standards of judicial fairness.
The police didn't care, you know, who the real killer of Faulkner was. They had the person they wanted. They wanted to silence, and they've tried to do so ever since. And they continue today, you know, through medical neglect in the prison system.
Mumia has maintained his innocence since 1981. His supporters say Mumia's innocence can be proven to win his freedom. However, they assert intentional delays and roadblocks have impacted the process.
Our job is to continue to broadcast from the places of silence. This is the motto for Pacifica. This is what Pacifica was made to do.
From Pacifica Radio, this is COVID, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by Pacifica Radio stations and its affiliates. I'm Akua Holt. Today, we hear voices from the front line. Mumia's supporters in the United States and internationally have worked diligently to shed light on the wall of resistance and structural racism they have encountered for decades.
We're in the midst of a movement that says Black Lives Matter. And if that's truly the case, then it means that Mumia's life and legacy must matter. And the causes that he sacrifices life and freedom for must matter as well.
Everybody needs to be outraged. I mean, outraged about this situation. Look at Mumia when he first went to jail. He was innocent. He's still innocent.
That came from lawyers to another lawyer because there's an open case acknowledging the harm that came to Mumia. And as a medical provider, we're part of a widening community that's asking reporters and the public to emerge with COVID compassion, with a clear understanding. It's time now to free our elders in prison.
Every tiny little action is one more ripple. That is a momentum that is going to bring all of the incarcerated elders that we live with home. That's going to roll back the tide of mass incarceration.
Free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Free Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Join us, and we will transform this grim reality. Join this freedom movement. On the move, long live John Africa. From Imprison Nation, this is your brother, Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Activist and hip-hop artist Mike Africa Jr. is host of the podcast On a Move with Mike Africa Jr. He is the subject of the original HBO documentary 40 Years a Prisoner, stage performer and keynote speaker. Mike Africa Jr. was recently interviewed on the People's War radio show on WBPU Black Power 96.3 FM in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Mumia Abu-Jamal is a political prisoner, first off, and he has been in prison since 1981. Mumia is a journalist. He's a husband. He's a father. He's a grandfather and a great-grandfather. He was accused of killing a cop in 1981. The reason he's in prison, though, has nothing to do with a dead cop. The reason Mumia is in prison is because he speaks the truth against the injustices in the system. When MOVE was going through the things that we were going through with the police and the officials in the city of Philadelphia, Mumia was a journalist that was speaking out about the experiences, and he would tell the truth about what was going on. And as a result, he became a target. And being a target in this country, especially when the person that's targeting you is a racist like Frank Rizzo, they try to see to it that they eliminate you. And when they couldn't kill him, they put him in prison. And that was nearly 40 years ago. And today, he remains in prison.
Just 3 years before Mumia's arrest, hundreds of Philadelphia cops, under the direction of then-mayor and notorious anti-Black thug Frank Rizzo, attacked one of the MOVE organization's houses and arrested nine of their members for the murder of one police officer. Mumia was one of the few journalists, as we noted, that came to the defense of the MOVE organization and spoke out against the attacks. Can you tell us about MOVE and the constant attacks that you all have endured?
To talk about the assaults, you know, the assaults on MOVE throughout the entire existence of the organization have been much like the assaults that you've seen on George Floyd and on Breonna Taylor and on Ahmaud Arbery and on Trayvon Martin and on other countless other members of the Black community. MOVE has been assaulted by the police and assaulted by the system ever since MOVE, but even before MOVE. But some of the attacks that we've experienced, listen, MOVE women have been beaten into miscarriage by police. MOVE babies have been killed by police. The police dropped a bomb on our house May 13th, 1985, and killed 11 of our family members, including 5 kids. You know, we've endured a lot. They put my parents in prison and gave them a 100-year jail sentence for a crime that 40 years later, the government apologized for. It's incredible. It's incredible that these things happen. It's incredible that these things are allowed to happen. It's incredible that they're allowed to happen by the public. It's also incredible that they're allowed to happen by the government. But it's important for us to know that the government don't care. They don't care about us. And that sounds like a obvious statement, but if you examine it a little closer, a little deeper, you look at the examples that proves that point. Right now, Derek Chauvin, the cop that killed George Floyd, kneeled on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, premeditated murder. He's on trial. If anybody in this country has ever seen a cop on trial, we already know how that trial is going to end. Meanwhile, you got people like Mumia Abu-Jamal, who's in prison for a questionable, very questionable case. And if the state has it their way, he'll die in prison. There's something wrong with that. There's a level of inequality that is unmatched in this country by anywhere else in the entire world. The United States has over 2.7 million people in prison. Disproportionately, the majority of those people are Black. Meanwhile, in everywhere, every other country in the world, it's a far less conviction rating, far less prison time. But the government makes so much money off of keeping people in prison. They need to keep people in prison to make money. That's their job. That's an industry. It's no different than the industry that makes clothes. They're making money off of the exploitation of life.
We thank the production team of the People's War Radio Show on WBPU, Black Power 96.3 FM in St. Petersburg, Florida. International family and friends of Mumia organizer Pam Africa shares information about Mumia's difficulty accessing basic health care while experiencing a major health challenge during an online forum organized by Mumia supporters.
On the move, everyone, and all I want to say is long live revolution. And when you least expect it, you're selected. And because I just got off the phone with Mumia about an hour ago, and he told me he believes that he have COVID. Let me tell you, Mumia does not let people know when he's sick. Every time we put information out about it, it was that we either found out from somebody else or Mumia's situation just so bad that, you know, we got the information. That's how all those things happening. It was youth power. It was the colleges and, you know, the youth in the street that, you know, put the information out about Mumia. In San Francisco in 98, I believe, when we did millions for Mumia, and our labor shut down the entire West Coast 2 days for Mumia, one for a meeting and one to join in. Nobody went to work. They joined in a battle for Mumia. You know, because in all these 39 years in prison and dealing with Mumia's legal case, the judges was not fair. They wouldn't allow evidence people to testify, you know, on Mumia's behalf. So now he's languished in jail for 39 years. And when we get this fair judge to finally, you know, put in so that Mumia can start, get a new trial and also manipulation, you know, went on there. This government is in a conspiracy to commit cold-blooded, premeditated murder. And I can't cold-blooded, premeditated murder, because when you sit down and you plot and you plan, and, you know, to kill this innocent man, you know, it's in cold blood. The Fraternal Order police put pressure him, and they went and got Mrs. Faulkner Berkovich, which was the widow of Officer Faulkner. They went and got her, and they came up with this King Bench thing, which actually stopped Mumia's case for 6 months. Nothing could go on. And in between that time, I don't know what happened to Krasner, the pressure or whatever. He came out and said, Mumia's guilty. There's no evidence to show that Mumia didn't have a fair trial. There was no judicial and prosecutorial misconduct. I have these numbers for the district attorney's office that people can call, and for the numbers to the prison. And the number to the district attorney's office is 215-686-8000. This is District Attorney Krasner's office. And the other number is to the prison where he's at, where they're saying he don't have COVID, 570-773-2158. Thank you. On the move, long live revolution. Hey, welcome to the revolution.
Move activist and freedom fighter Pam Africa. The website Generosity reports, coronavirus has disproportionately impacted 2.3 million people incarcerated in prisons, where the country's largest and most lethal outbreaks occur. These infection hotspots are more dangerous than long-term care facilities, bars, or cruise ships. One out of every five state and federal prisoners is positive, with the COVID-19 infection rate almost four times higher than the nation at large. The death rate is 45% higher than the general U.S. population. For the incarcerated and the staff who monitor them, COVID-19 morphs from a crisis into a public health disaster. Mumia supporters say D.A. Krasner, Governor Tom Wolf, and the Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections are responsible for Mumia's health care and that of all incarcerated people. They assert their refusal to release Mumia and to deny him and other ill and elderly incarcerated people proper health care amounts to nothing less than a death sentence.
You're listening to Terry Lynn Carrington and Social Science, communicating comments, thoughts, and prayers by the captive ones, political prisoners.
This is a call from
Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
In the land of the so-called free, this is your host from imprisoned nation, Mumia Abu-Jamal.
This is COVID Race and Democracy. I'm your host, Akua Holt. After learning of Mumia's COVID diagnosis, Julia Wright, the daughter of African-American author the late Richard Wright, wrote a letter to Mumia's supporters in the U.S. Julia Wright lives in Paris. The letter was read at a rally by Mumia's longtime supporter, Dr. Johanna Fernandez.
This is from Julia Wright, daughter of Richard Wright, the important African-American novelist and revolutionary. Since Mumia let us know about his alarming symptoms, serious alerts about his health have gone out internationally. Larry Krasner, Joe Wetzel, Tom Wolf know it. Their email boxes have been jammed full with messages pouring in from all over the country, from Germany, France, England, Spain, Africa, the Caribbean, you name it. I sent out health alerts yesterday to the United Nations following my 18th of February testimony to the UNHRC for Mumia and our elderly political prisoners. These health alerts went to the UN Special Rapporteur on Torture and the UN Special Rapporteur against Racism, knowing that the latter was on parental leave. To my surprise, 3 hours later, a member of the UN Rapporteur against Racism staff responded, which is unheard of coming from such a large, complex, multi-tiered body as the UN. Her letter let me know that the state of Pennsylvania had already been under scrutiny by the UN Human Rights Council in April 2015 when three UN special rapporteurs for the people of African descent for the right to highest attainable physical and mental health against torture confronted the state of Pennsylvania with the serious allegations that, quote, Mumia's health situation has deteriorated over the past few months, resulting in his admission to the ICU of a nearby clinic on March 30, 2015, in diabetic shock. It is alleged that as he had three comprehensive blood tests since February 2015, diabetes should have been diagnosed and treated accordingly. Instead, his medical condition was reportedly ignored by the prison guards, unquote. This is the second time there is smoke. This is the second time there must be fire. We have no doubt that in this post, George Floyd and Breonna Taylor context, the UN's inquiry would hold the PADOC accountable. The PADOC is a glass house through which the world can see. So it should hesitate before throwing too many stones at our elderly prisoners susceptible to COVID camped away in holes used to quarantine. Let our prisoners go. Julia Wright, March 3rd, 2021.
Santiago Alvarez is a student at the University of California, Santa Cruz, where Mumia is currently a graduate student. Alvarez is an organizer with the UC Santa Cruz Mumia Abu-Jamal Solidarity Collective, the Mumia San Francisco Action Committee, and the campaign to bring Mumia home.
When we got word that Mumia got COVID, we took to the DA's office in San Francisco. And that was like the next day. It actually turns out that Chesa Boudin, who is the progressive DA in San Francisco, he met us outside of the door. And there's a video on the Bring Mumia Home Instagram. He sent a text to Larry Krasner right then and there saying, hey, FYI, Mumia supporters are at my office. They say Mumia has COVID and we trust that you'll do what is right as you do in all cases. And that was a win for us. But it was also an entry point, you know, like we were making it known, you know, that we're here and that we're not going to let this happen, that we're speaking out against this and we're doing what we can nationally. People have been calling and that's been really effective. That's what allowed Mumia to get his tests. That's what allowed Mumia to be taken to the hospital. But we're also doing what we can locally in Santa Cruz, for example, where Mumia is taking graduate student courses, where he's a graduate student under the History of Consciousness Department. And so we had an event to pretty much say, you know, Mumia is a graduate student. We need to support him because he wasn't getting access to the resources that he needs to study. That was a call where Pam first announced that Mumia was feeling COVID-like symptoms and that he thinks he has COVID. And the head of the History of Consciousness Department was on the call. And so right now, what's being written up is a letter from the History of Consciousness Department at UC Santa Cruz to SCI Mahanoy, the prison where Mumia is locked up, saying free Mumia and you know, allow him, you know, give him the access that he needs, but free him. And like Pam mentioned in the recording, it's like the struggle to free Mumia has always been connected with the struggle to build labor power. And it's always been connected to an international struggle. If anything, Mumia is an entry point into revolutionary struggle, you know, in an internationalist, with an internationalist perspective. That's what we've been able to do. These are some wins that we want to just put out there and in a way that encourages other people to take action too in East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, internationally, wherever you are.
Broken messages, life sentences, long distances, lock entrances, chain necklaces, trial date tentative. All my black and brown people on the premises. They take the truth and they put it in parentheses. Add it up, multiply the percentages. Don't be fooled by the phony representatives. They want our heads, our organs, and percentages. Lock us down, separate us from our relatives. Blowing kisses through the glass of our nemesis, white supremacists, prejudice, menaces, beating drums, singing songs of the exodus, from start to finish, they call it the genesis, we planting seeds while they planting the evidence, no friends, enemies with the benefits, free Mumia, free Mumia, where the people let me see ya, free Mumia, free Mumia, say it loud, let me hear ya, let's go.
This is COVID Race and Democracy. I'm your host, Akua Holt. Betsy Piette, managing editor of Workers World newspaper, and Joe Piette, member of the Mobilization for Mumia, have been on the front lines of the fight for his freedom for decades. They bring us an update on the current status of his legal case.
I have been following Mumia's case both as an activist here in Philadelphia since 1995 and throughout that time as a journalist for Workers' World newspaper, writing on the case. I'm currently one of the managing editors of the newspaper. I was able to sit through almost all of the recent court hearings in his current appeal.
And I'm Joe Piette. I've also been active in the movement on the streets for Mumia since the mid-90s. I've worked with PAM Africa for decades with the International Concern Family and Friend of Mumia Abu-Jamal, and in the last five or so years with Mobilization for Mumia.
Mumia's issues from the beginning have focused on police corruption and misconduct, on a poor representation with his initial public defender, and on judicial and prosecutorial misconduct, including his attorney and being denied evidence in the case, his representation initially being inadequate, the police who were on the scene did the initial investigation of his case. Of the 30 officers, 15 of them were subsequently dismissed for corruption. And there are issues regarding racism in the jury selection, witnesses who were coerced to change their testimony. The list goes on. Every time Mumia's case has come before various courts for appeals, often on based on a ruling in another case before his that one would think would be favorable to him, the judicial system has ruled against him. And then only to reverse itself in the next case that comes along on the same issues. This has happened so often that journalist Lynn Washington Jr. here in Philadelphia has coined the phrase the Mumia exception. And, you know, we're seeing that again with the current situation with Philadelphia's so-called progressive district attorney, Larry Krasner, who, since he's been in office, his office has exonerated, at this point, 20 other individuals with cases very similar to Mumia's. You could tick all the boxes, and they would come out the same. And yet, in Mumia's case, he refuses to even investigate, have his office even investigate those charges that have been raised by Mumia.
So what do you believe is behind that? I mean, you're saying he campaigned as a progressive reform-oriented DA. He's ended the wrongful incarcerations of close to 20 people. So why is he fighting so hard to keep Mumia in prison?
I think one has to be in Philadelphia long enough to see the power of the Fraternal Order of Police here, who make and break political careers. Most of the judges on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court are there because they had the backing of the Philadelphia Fraternal Order of Police. This is true also for most DAs. I would suspect that Larry Krasner hopes to use his career as district attorney to launch you know, an additional political career. It's very hard to do on a statewide level without that FOP backing.
Welcome. This is from the preface of Jailhouse Lawyers. I mean, come on, seriously. What in the hell is a jailhouse lawyer? Depending on your station in life, the term is apt to evoke a variety of responses.
Judge Tucker made his ruling on Mumia's case toward the end of December 2018 in favor of Mumia having an appeal. Right after that ruling, Larry Krasner, claiming that he was searching, a couple days literally, after that ruling, claiming that he was searching for furniture in the district attorney's building, claimed to have stumbled upon six boxes of evidence in a storage area, hard to get to storage area, that had Mumia's name on them. They were numbered 20 of 29, 23 of 29. Leon Tucker allowed Mumia's attorneys to review them. Within those six boxes were pieces of evidence, including a letter written by the state's primary witness, Robert Chaubert, who was a taxi driver who claimed to have been on hand at the scene, asking, "Where's my money?" There was another piece of evidence that the prosecutor during jury selection had indicated the race of jurors on a piece of paper with a list of jurors, which is racial bias during a jury selection. All of these things were brought by Mumia's attorneys when they filed their four appellate briefs in September of 2019. And at the time, they also asked for the case to be remanded, to be sent back to the Common Pleas Court based on this new evidence that was uncovered in these boxes. They also had ample case history from Mumia's previous appeals after the ruling, finding him guilty in July of 1982.
I just want to make it clear here that a lot of the evidence has never seen the light of day in the courtroom. There was a court stenographer who reported to Mumia's attorneys, not during the court, not during the original trial, but later, after the court proceedings were all done, that she had heard Judge Szabo. He was the judge during the original trial, and he also was the judge who ruled against Mumia's appeals, the same judge. But she had heard him say during the original trial, "I'm going to help them fry the N-word," quote unquote. She's made that in an official affidavit that that's what she heard. So the judge himself, Judge Szabo, was a hanging judge. He had convicted more people to death row than any other judge in the country. And the overwhelming majority of them, Black and people of color. That's never been heard in court. And there's other information. The police story was that Mumia had his gun. I'm raising issues that were never raised in court. In addition to the information in the boxes, there's more information besides the stenographer's affidavit. There's also the issue of the police story, which is that Mumia, when Officer Faulkner was on the ground, Mumia took with his pistol, shot several times, and eventually one of those bullets hit the officer in the head, meaning that many of those shots missed and hit the sidewalk underneath the underneath Faulkner. So coincidentally, there was a photographer whose name was Polikoff and who was taking photos, and the police had not set up a perimeter, and Polikoff was able to walk wherever he wanted and took photos. He took a photo of police holding the two guns, both Faulkner's and Mumia's, with his bare hands, a violation of procedure. But he also took photos of the area where the shootings took place, first of all, the defense attorney didn't know about those photos. But Paul Holikoff offered the photos to the police, who I believe said they didn't want to use them. So Polakoff for years had these photos. And a few years back, 10 years ago, Polakoff notified the defense attorneys that he had these photos, if they might be useful to us. So we took a look at those photos, and there is no evidence of any divots in the sidewalk. There's no, it doesn't back up the police story. In order to prove it, the defense created the same conditions. They shot into a sidewalk from like 6 feet away, trying to recreate the police story. And when they shot with the same gun, that same caliber gun, into a sidewalk, it always created these very visible marks in the sidewalk, divots. However, none of those divots are in any of the photos of the scene. So these Polakoff photos are very important to Mumia's defense. That's never been in court before. And there's a number of similar evidence that could prove that the police narrative of what happened on that day is incorrect, that there are witnesses that said, we saw the shooter leave the scene, run down the street. That none of that was ever brought up in court.
One of the photos, and this was taken right after the shooting, because Polakoff was a freelance journalist, and a freelance photographer who, you know, made a living from, you know, when you hear the police radio, you run to the scene. And his photos clearly show no sign of Chauvert's cab anywhere near the scene. And they do show a police car there that was Faulkner's. And the point that's been made by, Mumia's supporters is that, Chauvert is on probation, driving with a suspended license. Would he have parked his cab right behind a police car? And the odds of him doing that are slim to none. And the photos show that there was no cab there.
In the testimony that Chauvert gave, he said he had parked
right behind the cab. So it became kind of clear that they didn't care. The police didn't care, who the real killer of Faulkner was. They had the person they wanted. They wanted to silence, and they've tried to do so ever since. And they continue today, through medical neglect in the prison system.
Betsy and Joe Piet, thanks for your work.
That was Betsy Piet, managing editor of Workers' World newspaper, and Joe Piet, photographer and member of Mobilization for Mumia. Thanks to producer Ken Yell. Visit our website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org, to learn more about their work and other information to stay connected to the movement to free Mumia. Noelle Hamberhan, investigative journalist and director of Prison Radio featuring Mumia Abu-Jamal, has worked with Pacifica for decades reporting on racism and corruption in the criminal justice system. Since 1992, she's the producer of Mumia's global radio analysis and commentaries. Her work is an important link in the struggle to free Mumia.
In 1989 and 1990, I was working at KPFA in Berkeley, California, one of the flagship stations of Pacifica. And we were doing programming on U.S. political imprisonment and prisoners. And I became aware of Mumia Abu-Jamal's case. So he had been incarcerated in 1981 and 82 and convicted in 82. And by 1989, 1990, we were starting to cover imprisonment, political imprisonment on KPFA's airwaves. When I heard that, I reached out to Mumia and asked to record him. I had heard a very tiny scratchy tape of him. I hadn't actually recorded him yet. And I had been producing programming for Pacifica and for the National on incarceration and on the death penalty. Pennsylvania was one of the largest death rows, but California had a massive death row as well. So we were covering San Quentin, which you can almost see from Pacifica's offices and KPFA's offices. So we were really, the death penalty was coming back. California was about to reinstate the death penalty in 1992. And so it was a hot topic moment. We were covering all that. So I was looking for a voice from death row to record. I heard a scratchy tape of Mumia. I went to Pennsylvania. I recorded him. And I've got these master tapes from July of 1992 of Mumia Abu-Jamal doing his first recording for radio in 11 years since he had been incarcerated. And so I went there, put a microphone in front of him, and I was shocked. I did not realize that Mumia Abu-Jamal was a trained broadcast journalist in the finest African-American tradition of this country. Amazing legacy of work that he had done. And he was like James Earl Jones in a box. He has a fantastic voice and he has a political consciousness. He's a revolutionary. It was the perfect combination. Got him, got the tapes, brought them back, started airing them. And that is when the censorship started happening. I got master tapes of Mumia Abu-Jamal and I took them to Pacifica National and Gail Christian and I put them in the tape player and I played them for her. And the National Pacifica Network said, I don't want to make him a martyr. We are never going to air those tapes nationally. I walked out of that room, down the stairs, across the road, and I went to Ellen Weiss, the director of National Public Radio's All Things Considered. And I put that same DAT tape in a player for her an hour later. She said, this is one of the best commentators I've ever heard. We are going to put him on All Things Considered and make him a national broadcaster. And then after NPR National started promoting it, Congress got involved and Bob Dole got up on the Senate floor and threatened NPR's funding if they ever dared broadcast that material. So Ellen Weiss, the director of All Things Considered and VP at NPR, called me into her office and said, bring me a more acceptable prisoner. Go find me somebody who can talk about these super important issues. Ellen Weiss got it. She got that we were at the beginning of this incarceration race and mass incarceration. She said, we need somebody from inside to talk about this, but it can't be Mumia Abu-Jamal because Bob Dole had just threatened her funding. She turned and looked out the window and you could see the Capitol. And she said, I never thought that I would actually get censored from the Capitol. It just didn't occur to me. It had occurred to Gail Christian. All Things Considered is actually All Things Censored, or what the police want you to consider. They still have those tapes. They still have 12 tapes in their basement at National Public Radio that they've never let anyone hear. When the censorship of All Things Considered happened, when they yanked those tapes, we went then to Democracy Now! And Democracy Now! Was associated with Pacifica, started in Pacifica, and was willing to take up the cause, in part because they had Juan Gonzalez. And Juan Gonzalez was a colleague of Mumia Abu-Jamal's in Philadelphia when Mumia was a journalist. And so they took up the cause, and they started broadcasting Mumia Abu-Jamal, and that was a beautiful thing. And it also went to every single other station. So Pacifica has 5 stations and many affiliates. And I went to all of those stations, and I sought out the programmers, the people who press play from the board, who were going to broadcast this talent. And yes, Mumia Abu-Jamal has been censored many, many times. Addison Wesley dumped his books because they were afraid that the FOP were going to go after their textbook division. HBO pulled all of its content when they were airing his piece because they were afraid of the Fraternal Order of Police. But we cannot be afraid of these people. We have to understand that this is our job. Our job is to continue to broadcast from the places of silence. This is the motto for Pacifica. This is what Pacifica was made to do. You know, Kai he's produced 13 books. And for every book, we've had to fight to get him on the air. We've had to fight to get that book published. And it's worth it. It's worth doing.
Obviously, this voice has been reaching millions. And that is why the government and the corporations that control the media want him shut down. They haven't been successful yet. Will they be successful? And will his life be saved by the mobilization of people in this country?
You know, I think that people will bring Mumia home. It's a combination of the legal and the political. The legal apparatus has to be ready to pop open the keys, but the political movement, the people's movement, every tiny little action is one more ripple. That is a momentum that is going to bring all of the incarcerated elders that we live with home. That's going to roll back the tide of mass incarceration. We've lived through 40 years of having our priorities radically changed and the incarceration rate being just heaped upon the poor and working people. And that is going to change, and we're going to change it. And I do believe that.
That was Noelle Hanrahan, interviewed by Pacifica Steve Zeltzer.
Only one thing sadder than remembering you were once free, and that's forgetting that you were once free.
This is COVID Race and Democracy. I'm your host, Akua Holt. We now hear a commentary recorded in 2020 in which Mumia speaks about the case of another journalist and political prisoner, the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange.
Julian Assange, perhaps one of the best known of the WikiLeaks collective, spent 7 years in the Ecuadorian embassy in London until, under circumstances that remain unclear, his asylum became his detention pending his extradition to the United States. Why? Because WikiLeaks revealed the crimes of the U.S. empire in Iraq and Afghanistan, where U.S. forces killed non-combatants for fun, including journalists. Assange's group showed memos and video of U.S. armed forces joking while killing and the consequences of the Imperial War based on baseless lies. Assange, by passing on these memos and tapes to U.S. and global journalists, revealed the cruelties of Imperial War and how easily such wars are accomplished. That is his crime. It is for that reason that he's in detention again, awaiting the reality of a free press. The question arises, of course, is Julian Assange a political prisoner? I don't think there's any question that can reasonably be asked about that, given the fact that he is a prisoner and has been held in asylum by governments, by states, for acts that are legal, that are in the public interest, and that tend to inform people of that which governments don't want people to know about. There can be no question on this issue. And because of that, I think you know the answer. And as someone who has been charged for being a member of a political organization and convicted and sentenced to death, I think I have some insight on that matter. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
Dr. Johanna Fernandez is an associate professor in the Department of History at Baruch College of the City University of New York and author of The Young Lords, A Radical History. She is a leading voice in the fight to free Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Mumia is an imprisoned radio journalist. At the time of his imprisonment and his framing in 1981, he was an award-winning journalist who could regularly be heard in the local affiliate of NPR in Philadelphia, WHYY. In fact, he won the Major Armstrong Award in broadcasting, a coveted award for broadcasters. And he won that for his reporting on the Pope's visit to Philadelphia. He forms part of approximately 1960s era political prisoners. These folks have been imprisoned for their activities and campaigns and activism in the Black Power and Civil Rights Movement era. Mumia has written many books from prison, 13 or 14. One of them, at least, is a New York Times bestseller, and that was Live from Death Row in 1995, which was the first book that humanized death row from the inside by a death row prisoner himself, Mumia, but really talked about the links between the institution of the death penalty and the institution of lynchings, and offered a class analysis of the institution. His analysis represents a continuity in the Black radical tradition, a continuity of Black radical dissent from the 1960s to the present. And that's why the state reserves a special vitriol for Mumia. And historically, the state has sought to make an example of people who dare challenge empire. So in the late 19th century, labor activists who were identified as part of the Haymarket affair were rounded up by the police, accused of crimes they did not commit, and sentenced to death. In the early 20th century, Sacco and Vanzetti, two anarchists, were executed by the state. In the 1950s, the Rosenbergs were executed by the state's communists. And in the post-civil rights movement era, Mumia became the figure that the state wanted to make an example of, to send a message to those who dare resist authority, resist the state, resist capitalism, resist empire, that this is what will happen to you. So when you ask the question, why is Mumia important? Why do we need to stand with Mumia? Because if we allow the state to get away with murder in the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, we're giving the state license to do the same with people who dare stand up for justice today. The Fraternal Order of Police is the organization that has sought to silence Mumia, first through the demonization of Mumia and an attempted execution, which failed because an international movement saved his life in the 1990s. And finally, he got off death row in 2011 when the state itself determined that his death sentence was obtained unconstitutionally. The Fraternal Order of Police, whose poster child is Mumia Abu-Jamal, is the most powerful police organization in the world, and its power is comparable to that of the NRA. Mumia is important because his case is at the center of the struggle against the homicidal character of the police in the United States. And if you look at his case, a third of the police officers involved in collecting evidence in his case, within weeks of the end of his case, were convicted and jailed for corruption and manipulating evidence to obtain convictions in unrelated cases. But if you look at the evidence in this case, the cops pretty much framed Mumia and cooked up the crime scene. I want to go back to Mumia as a Black Panther. In the 1960s, the Black Panthers popularized the term pig to demolish the notion that the police are our friends. And they succeeded. And by the end of the 60s, everyone knew what the term pig represented. And it was used often in the United States. In response, the police launched a counter propaganda campaign against the Black Panthers. They emblazoned the words "to serve and protect" on their cars. And essentially, this was a co-optation of the Black Panther slogan, "to serve the people." That was their more benign maneuver. The most detrimental of the maneuvers of the police, ideologically, was the popularization of the term "cop killer." Cop killer became this ideological weapon that in the post-60s period replaced the mythological rape of a white woman as the basis for the legal lynching of Black men in particular. And when you think about cop killers, you think of Black men, but the majority of people who kill cops in the United States, the vast majority are white men. So why do we need to free Mumia, support him, stand with him? because he represents all of us. And he has been identified by the cops, by the Fraternal Order of Police, by the state, as one of the most dangerous figures in this country because of what he stands for, which is resistance and unrelenting determination to expose inequality, to expose the police and its character, but also to fight for a completely different world organized around human need. A fight for Mumia is a fight for ourselves and our highest aspirations.
That was Professor Johanna Fernandez, a longtime activist in the fight to free political prisoners, writer and host of A New Day on WBAI Pacifica Radio in New York City. And we close with Mumia Abu-Jamal's latest commentary, a message of acknowledging activists, organizers, and supporters for the recent intervention that resulted in medical attention.
Dear sisters, brothers, comrades, and friends, and family, on the move, how can I thank you? These, my words, can hardly measure the flood of love that you have radiated on my behalf recently. I am almost without words. But I'll try. Thank you, Wadia. Thank you, Pan-Africa. Your support from Philadelphia to France, from points across the nation, and literally around the globe, have pulled me from a prison cell and placed me in a hospital room to be treated for a condition I didn't know I had. In the age of pandemic, now, indeed, deeply doubted pandemic, as of January 2021, over 300,000 prisoners have tested positive for COVID-19. Imagine that. In a cell, trying to breathe with a weight pressing on your chest. Imagine an elder man or woman, or even a young person. Because yes, we are also in an age of mass incarceration, which day by day increases its infliction upon the elderly, struggling unsuccessfully to breathe, to walk, to be. I thank you all for reaching out, and I urge you all, let our mission be abolition. I love you all. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
This concludes our special edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy. We thank all Pacifica stations and affiliates who supported this production. Special thanks to the Pacifica COVID Task Force. Today's show was produced and edited by Aku Holt and Paulina Vasiliev. Executive producers are Steve Zeltzer, Paulina Vasiliev, and Aku Holt. Special thanks to producers Ken Yell and Ursula Rodenberg. And to our media intern, Akono Kamau. We also thank Gloria Rubeck and Ted Kelly of Workers World for sharing audio of their online forum to raise awareness about Mumia's case and his health crises. You can find this and all previous episodes along with today's playlist and information about how to get involved in the fight for justice for Mumia and all political prisoners at covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. I'm Akua Holt. Thanks for listening. I leave you with this quote. Just because it's legal doesn't make it right. John Africa, founder of MOVE.